From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, 50 Shades of Grey, the erotic, explicit, bondage-based, S&M-stuffed romance trilogy is by no means great literature. But as pop culture, blockbuster, best-selling phenom, it's as big as they get right now. 20 million sold as of this week in the U.S. alone. 31 million globally in English. Overwhelmingly, women buying it, we're told. And what they're buying is not Little House on the Prairie. It's steamy, kinky romance. There's a lot tied up in it. This hour On Point, the phenomenon that is 50 Shades of Grey. You can join the conversation. Have you read it? Are you reading it? What made you pick it up? Is it what you expected, what you needed? What's the conversation you're having about the relationship between young Anastasia Steele and billionaire Christian Grey? What's the conversation you're having about sex, power, men, women, love, lust? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Please note, some of the content of this show will be sexual in nature, but we're really looking at the big themes of what's going on here. Joining me now from the beautiful Harborfront Inn in Greenport, New York, is Megan O'Rourke, culture critic for Slate. 50 Shades was a Slate Book Club pick. Megan, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Thanks for coming in. And with us from Philadelphia is Carolyn Marvin, professor at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Pennsylvania. Carolyn, great to have you back.
Nice to talk to you, Tom.
It's great to have you right there. We'll hear in a few minutes from Rachel Kramer-Bussell, editor of Best Bondage Erotica 2012. Who knew this is where we would be with a great big cultural phenom? Megan, what is it that's driving this book to these unbelievable heights of sales?
Well, you know, Tom, I think the answer to that question is a little bit complicated. I think, first of all, the fact that this book began as Twilight fan fiction was responsible for a big part of its early popularity. Then, of course, there is the fact that this is basically a romance story with a twist. The male protagonist, looks a lot like other male protagonists of romance novels.
I.e. drop-dead handsome, we're told again and again, yeah.
Yeah, handsome, enigmatic, distant, and yet compelling. But there's a little bit of a twist here, a hook, which is that he's also into S&M. He is a dominant looking for a submissive, and the heroine, Anna Steele, is a very young woman who is a virgin, and this is all very new to her. And so I think that hook, there's a kind of curiosity piece. There's a conversation starter there. And, once the book reached a certain kind of popularity, I think that a lot of people who might not have read it were curious about that part of it. I mean, here we are talking about it for this very reason. And that curiosity piece is a big part of the popularity of this book.
No question. I mean, it's a hook, though it's kind of an unexpected hook. I mean, Carolyn, this is up in, Harry Potter range and the Da Vinci Code and the Hunger Games and all the rest. Takes more than a hook to get up there and stay up there, Carolyn. What do you think's driving it?
Well, I think it is the product of a money machine. I think the same people who have figured out, how to make Da Vinci Code work and Harry Potter and all that saw the potential in the popularity with the fan fiction. And, why not something that has to do with soft porn? But this isn't, this is also a very, very old story, this idea that women are engaged in scandalous sexual adventures and then that becomes a literary phenomenon or a literary scandal. And, this goes all the way back to the 18th century and Fanny Hill, which is the very first English language pornographic knowledge. And, you can even point to a series of landmarks all the way through from the 18th century in Fanny Hill, which immediately had to go underground because it was scandalous. And then the Marquis de Sade came along at the end of the 19th century with Justine and Juliet, and Napoleon made him go to jail, and then in the 19th century, you had other pornographic books, and a lot of those were driven by anti-Catholic pornography in the English-speaking world in particular, and were scandalous not only for their sexual comment. I mean, they had titles like The Confessional Unmasked, but also for their sacrilegious content. And then we all kind of have a cultural memory of books like Ulysses and Lolita and Lady Chatterley's Lover and all of those things that in the 60s, the law changed. So now the scandalous books like John Updike or Bret Easton Ellis, American Psycho, and this book. There's no legal question really about them. So, you know, it just becomes a question of a cultural discussion about what is sex supposed to be and how are women supposed to be in sex.
And maybe how women feel freer than ever to talk about or read about things related to their own desire. Megan O'Rourke, help us understand the background here a little bit. I mean, this is really interesting and very contemporary in its origin. You've got this London TV producer, Erica Leonard, and a couple of years ago, she started writing fan fiction. This is where people pick up on books that have already been written, typically go online and start writing their own version. She keyed off of the vampire super blockbuster series Twilight and started writing a kind of erotic version of Twilight, and pretty soon she had all kinds of readers, Megan.
That's correct. Yeah. And, you know, apparently early on, I mean, I don't know that much about fan fiction, but I guess early on the story came attached with a disclaimer that this is fan fiction and that the author is not going to make any money from this, so that there's no copyright infringement. And, you know, the characters were, you know, I think Christian was Edward. And
they were still named as with the Twilight series names.
The vampire and Anna, who retained some of Bella from Twilight's characteristics. For example, she's very awkward, right? And she's quite young.
Mm-hmm. She's 21, he's 27, the older man, but not by a whole lot in this.
Not by a lot. He might even be 26, I can't remember.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's set in the Pacific Northwest, right? It's in Seattle and Vancouver. And so there's this real connection to that landscape. And it began that way and then it morphed into its own independent story with different characters, and no vampires.
She goes under the pen name E.L. James now. The e-book was on the bestseller list already, and then Vintage Books came in and bought up the rights, and now it's out there selling almost 10 million in e-book form, which is interesting in itself, almost 10 million now in paperback form. Sort of over the moon in those terms in that industry. I've got a little bit here, an excerpt from the audiobook of 50 Shades of Grey. Here's a piece where Christian Grey presents Anastasia Steele with an obedience contract. Becca Bateau is the reader.
He disappears through a wide doorway on the far side of the room. He's gone for a couple of minutes and returns with a document. This is a non-disclosure agreement. He shrugs and has the grace to look a little embarrassed. My lawyer insists on it. He hands it to me. I'm completely bemused. If you're going for option two, debasement, you'll need to sign this. And if I don't want to sign anything? Then it's Angel Claire, high ideals. Well, for most of the book, anyway. What does this agreement mean? It means you cannot disclose anything about us. Anything. To anyone. I stare at him in disbelief.
And in the super bestseller of 2012, she stares in disbelief and goes for option two, debasement. There's all kinds of takeoffs on this now. Just this past weekend, the YouTube user AV Byte uploaded 50 Shades of Grey, the musical. Here, two women sing about their dueling reactions to the book.
50 Shades of Grey, my new favorite book. Every fantasy right in front of me, I can read it while I cook. 50 Shades of Grey, how could I refuse? In my boring life as a plain housewife, I can dream of being sexually abused.
50 Shades of Grey, no way. Every page I read makes my eyeballs bleed. Someone please explain how this makes sense.
They're off YouTube, and 50 Shades of Grey, the musical, just spontaneously popping up. I mean, Megan, it's incredible. I was at the auto body shop, the garage, and the very elegant proprietress there, a lady of a certain age, got it right out on the counter. She's reading as she checks people in and out, getting their cars. This is not exactly, you know, hiding up in the attic, flipping pages.
Yeah, there's no brown paper wrapper here. I was kind of shocked by that, I have to say. you know, one of the things that's interesting to me about this book is, two things. First of all, it's much less about S&M than I thought it was going to be.
Though there's plenty.
There is plenty, I suppose. But having, you know, read so much about the book before I read it, I only read it about 3 weeks ago, I thought it was going to be a very different book. I thought she was going to be much more into the S&M. I thought all of their sex was going to be S&M, whereas actually a lot of their sexual encounters are what Christian calls vanilla. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's really striking about this book to me is that it's really as much about the eros of capital as it is about the eros of submission. So much of this book is about Christian's wealth and the things that he's able to give to Anna.
Cars and laptops and you name it.
And the first thing she thinks when they're about to have sex for the first time, and it's vanilla sex, and she knows that it's going to be that, is she looks in his room and she's like, his bed is so huge, you know, and his towels are so fluffy.
So is this hard times fantasy of the billionaire life?
Well, I think there's definitely some of that. I think it's a very 21st century fantasy in that she is definitely clocking all of his possessions, right, at all times, and allowing the reader to kind of participate in the fantasy of having really nice-smelling hand towels, you know, which is a really big part of this book. The other thing about Christian that's worth noting, and this goes back to what Carolyn was saying, is that he's quite chivalric. For all that he's S&M, you know, he calls her Miss So-and-so. He's distant, but he's always holding the door open for her. He's a very kind of uptight, old-fashioned sense of propriety. Which
Chivalry and handcuffs here. Great. We're off in new terrain. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about the social and publishing phenomenon of 50 Shades of Grey. 20 million copies of the kinky S&M romance sold as of this week. Buyers, overwhelmingly women, were asking what's up with the 50 Shades trilogy? What's made it such a blockbuster? And gentle warning here, there's sexual content in the book, and we'll be referring to that in this hour. Megan O'Rourke is with us from Slate, joins us from Harborfront Inn in Greenport, New York today. Carolyn Marvin is here from Annenberg School of Communication, University of Pennsylvania, joins us from Philadelphia. The passages, some passages in 50 Shades are pretty explicit. Some people relish it. Others, well, let's just say some passages aren't so easy to get through. This past April, Ellen DeGeneres aired this skit on her show in which she attempts to record for the 50 Shades of Grey audiobook. Needless to say, things didn't go as planned.
50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James, read by Ellen DeGeneres. He grabs me suddenly and yanks me up against him. One hand at my back holding me to him and the other hand... Oh, my God. I'm not going to say that. Is it okay if I paraphrase so that I don't say the exact words, but it's just more like... I'm going to put it in my own words. He guides his hands across my secret garden. Well, I don't think you should use a spatula for that. If you go to Anastasia's house, don't eat the pancakes, everybody. Do not eat the pancakes!
Ellen DeGeneres taking off on 50 Shades of Grey. We've got lots of listeners, Meg and Carolyn, taking off online. Here's a Samantha says, it's like someone took Twilight and some letters to Penthouse, threw them both in a blender, called the result a book. It's not very well written. That said, Samantha writes, I read all three in less than 2 weeks. Laugh out loud. LOL there. Patricia says, well said, Samantha. I'm guilty of reading the trilogy over a weekend. Angie says, I read the trilogy in a weekend. Must confess, I go to sleep and dream of Christian every night. Ugh. My BF is seriously competing with a fictional character. LOL there as well. Carolyn, it's funny how much LOL there is around this. At the same time, you've got the sort of spanky spatulas out there.
But, you know, to build on Megan's point, if you actually took out all the bondage and discipline stuff out of that 500-page novel, you'd have a very conventional, familiar romance narrative. You know, it's the unsexually awakened girl who's very insecure about herself meets a guy who's very powerful and an outsider and special, not like other men in some ways. And she's very attracted to him, and she fights these feelings, and she fights them because, she thinks that he has values that he shouldn't have. And eventually the story is that he's distant, and so she tries to bring him toward her and her values.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that is so
classic
many romance narratives.
Yeah.
Perfectly familiar. And even Ellen DeGeneres' piece that you played, which I thought was so interesting, the actual terms that are used for body parts in 50 Shades of Grey are very euphemistic. I mean, there's a lot of sex and there's a lot of foreplay, but when we get down to organs, you know, they're very euphemistically treated. So it's very clean language, and Ellen DeGeneres makes it sound like she's about to say something very scandalous, and the language is very clean.
A lot of people haven't read it. I'll give you a little sense. Turn around, he whispers. I want to get you out of that dress. Another mercurial mood swing. It's so hard to keep up. Obediently, I turn and my heart is thumping, desire instantly replacing unease, coursing through my blood and settling dark and yearning low, low in my belly. He scoops my hair off my back so it hangs down my right side, curling at my breast. He places his index finger at the nape of my neck and achingly, slowly drags it. And on we go. There are from 50 Shades of Grey. But if that doesn't sound like a sort of standard issue romance novel, I don't know what does. Right now with us from New York, Rachel Kramer Bussell joins us, writer, editor of over 40 erotica anthologies, editor of Best Bondage Erotica 2012. Rachel, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I have to say, I hadn't dreamed that I'd be talking to someone with your resume exactly, and here we are writing this giant kind of tidal wave publishing phenom. What do you make of it, Rachel? You've been writing out of this neck of the woods long before it was selling 20 million copies of anything.
Well, I think we're at a point now where I'm seeing people writing blog posts why I'm not reading 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, yeah.
There's kind of an assumption that, especially if you're a woman, you know, you should at least know what's going on in the books just to keep up with pop culture, because every day there's a new story about it, whether it's the movie deal. The producers of The Social Network were just announced as the producers of the movie, or the hotel package tie-ins, or the merchandising.
Right. It's
I feel
everywhere.
Like now it's just reached, you know, mass appeal.
Do your bondage readers read it and snort and say, oh, that's nothing?
Well, I think it's less that that's nothing than in a lot of the erotica that I edit and write and that I see, there's a lot more back and forth. You see the desire of both of the characters. And I think that passage that you just read, Anna doesn't really know about this world. And she's, at the beginning anyway, only going along with it pretty much because he wants her to. And he's saying, well, if you don't do this, I'm not going to see you anymore.
What about the Eros of capital Megan O'Rourke talks about here? I mean, he is so rich, and it's talked about all the time. Is the money as much of the draw as the hubba-hubba?
I think it's the power that comes along with the money. You know, he can do all these things for her, and he is a very dominant personality, not just in the bedroom. And I think that's something that you see throughout the books, that his sense of, I can just buy a person or a company, or I can control everything, pervades both their sex life and everything else that they're doing. And I think she has this push-pull relationship with that. Like, she's drawn to it, but she wants to give him back some of the stuff he's given her when they break up, because she doesn't want to feel like he's controlling her in every way.
We'll look at the dominant submission themes in a time when women are generally looked at as anything but old-time submissive. Let's go to our listeners, Leslie in Nashville. Leslie, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I got caught up in the whole trilogy and reading it. My sister-in-law gave me the book, and she's like, you've got to read this. And I personally hadn't even heard of it.
Okay.
So I picked it up, and I couldn't put it down. And I've read all three of the books multiple times. The first time it was shock, and the second time it was like, I need to understand this. And the third time it was like, what is happening to this girl?
Yeah.
So for me, it was something I'd never read before. So that's what the appeal to me is.
So is it the relationship? Is it the, I don't know, fancy cars? Is it the money? Is it the sex?
No,
what's pulling you in there?
It's the sex. It's the sex and the description of it. And, you know, just, it was like I'd never read anything like that before. What's interesting is my neighborhood book club, all the ladies were going to get together tonight because we've all read the book. So we're going to be discussing it.
And are you hearing thumbs up so far, or, oh my gosh, this is too much, or what's the pattern?
Both. People are saying, have they no shame, and people are saying that they're blushing while they're reading it, and they're embarrassed. They're sitting next to their husband reading it, and they're embarrassed. So it should be interesting, I think,
about. Could be a hot time at the old book club tonight. Leslie, thanks for calling. Megan O'Rourke, how do you look at this issue? And, you know, people are writing about this. Here you've got the submissive and the dominant in this relationship. And this in a time when women are kind of more empowered and doing more big empowered things than ever. How does this come into our cultural conversation all of a sudden? How does this soar up so high, Megan?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a hot button topic, and this is one of the reasons this book has been a hot button topic in the media is, you know, can we as post-feminist women, you know, in a post-feminist age, are we allowed to read this book? Are we allowed to fantasize about being submissive, right? What does it say about feminism that so many women are reading this book? I think the answer to that question is complicated, and part of it, you know, that we have to just say is, fantasies of submission and domination are as old as the hills, and particularly among women. We know men fantasize about it too, but women, you know, have these sexual fantasies about submission. There is an argument that some critics have made that I think that there's something to it, that in a moment of recession and in a moment when the recession has hit so many men in particular, so many men have lost their jobs, that women are perhaps drawn to this fantasy, as Rachel was saying, of this man who is powerful not just in the bedroom but everywhere, mm-hmm. right? Not only is he rich, he flies a plane. He mm-hmm. knows what wine to order.
He has a helicopter pad.
He knows, like, if your sink was broken, he would know how to fix it. Mm-hmm. You know, and for me, that was definitely a very powerful part of this book, was just that Christian seems to be able to deal with anything. I mean, he may be distant, but that's the price you pay for having a man around you.
Rachel, do we go right from that, you know, he can repair the sink and fly the plane to bring me the clothesline?
Well, he would never have her bring him the clothesline, I don't think, but maybe he would. You know, it's more like he takes out the clothesline. And in fact, like, that's what's interesting about it, is he's doing so much to and for her. A really big part of this book, which, you know, is one thing Christian is trying to persuade Anna, is that being submissive in the bedroom is actually a form of being powerful, because what he is trying to do is to please her, right? So even though there's this way in which this looks like it's kind of a cognitive dissonance, where mm-hmm. how could a woman who wants equality in her marriage have these sexual fantasies about submission in the bedroom, in the red room of pain, you know, it's very much the case that Anna is in control here. I mean, Christian says to her, I'm not going to be with you unless you do these things. But then, in fact, he goes and does all sorts of things for her and has sex with her in ways that... Because of his passion for her. And this, again, is the classic romance, that the man is changed by the woman, right, and the female heroine. And part of the journey is the woman being able to kind of change and transform the man and be transformed herself. I mean, the other thing I would say, just going back to your question about what does it mean to be reading this book in this moment, is Anna is very passive in this book in a lot of ways, as Rachel was saying. And so it's, I think, quite easy to read this book or enter this book or be into the sex scenes and be curious about the story, even if you're maybe put off by the S&M, because Anna herself is put off by it. Mm-hmm. So as a reader, you can identify with Anna and be curious and kind of titillated and you know, turned on by some of the sex scenes, because there's not that much S&M. It starts slowly. I mean, the kind of,
she's resisting it in her heart, even though she's on the path.
Exactly. And yet she gets kind of flushed, and, you know, her body is aching and constantly biting her lip.
Right.
You know.
It is a romance novel. Melinda in Knoxville. Melinda, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm curious on everyone's take on the fact that, first of all, I have no desire to read these books, but the fact that this trilogy is in the top 10 bestseller, as are The Hunger Games, which have no sexual content in them. I was just curious what everyone's take was on that.
That's interesting. Hunger Games, with this sort of superpower young woman, girl, right up there. And yeah, this one is not just in the top 10. I mean, Wall Street Journal, it is the top of the bestseller list. Megan, what do you think about those two back-to-back?
Well, look, I mean, let's add another piece into the mix here. Magic Mike was, you know, one of the top movies the past 2 weekends, and it was 73% women who went to see it in opening weekend.
And what's that about? I've missed that one, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's about male strippers.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, okay.
It's Channing Tatum and Matthew McConaughey are male strippers in Florida. And so I think that we are seeing how powerful women are as consumers, for one thing. You know, women make 85% of consumer purchases in America. They control, I think, something like 60% of private wealth. So that's part of what we're seeing for sure. I mean, the heroine of The Hunger Games is really different from Anna Steele, but she's also a young woman on a quest.
Carolyn Marvin, I've got here, Nicole writes to us, just started the books, that's 50 Shades this weekend to see what all the fuss was about. She writes, perhaps I'm an old school feminist, but the ideas of control and submission kind of bother me. I mean, you hear what Rachel and Megan have to say there, Carolyn, but even so, what do you think of it? Or is this in fact another kind of empowerment? Women free to exercise their imaginations, fantasies across a whole range?
Well, remember that the bondage is presented as his fantasies rather than hers. Her fantasies are more very traditional in the sense that, and something I think a feminist can be happy with, which is she wants him to pay attention to her. She wants him to care about her, to cherish her. And she does, and he does. And at the same time, you know, I wanted to say about the Eros of Capital, all the way through this book, the author has it both ways. And that is, all of these gifts are lavished upon the main character, but at the same time, she feels guilty about it. You know, so she gets a pass. She doesn't, she accepts them, she lives them, but we hear that she really wishes he wouldn't do that. So she doesn't really have to pay the consequences of having those things because, you know, she stays pure inside. She really doesn't want them. And it's the same thing about the sex, I think, is that, you know, she's resisting it the whole time that she's participating in it.
And kind of building her power as she goes and taming the beast as she goes. Cheryl in Columbia, South Carolina. Cheryl, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. And
hi.
Yes.
Hi.
I am in a book club as well, a small book club. Uh-huh. There are three 20-something-year-old women. I'm in my 50s, and there's a lady actually in her 70s.
Okay. Good range.
And of course, you can imagine that the book was chosen by one of the 20-year-olds. And, it's been quite a read. I can't wait for the book discussion. We haven't had that yet. The lady in her 70s was a single woman during the 60s and 70s, so she was sexually active single woman.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be very interesting to hear everybody's take on this. One of the issues I haven't heard discussed is how the main character was abused as a child.
That is Christian Grey, the billionaire guy. And that's why he's so into this. We're led to
15 years old when his mother's friend introduced him to this lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
which of course is, you know, ridiculous. Today, of course, we would hope that person would go to prison. And as a mother of two daughters and a son, my big concern is if they're reading, what are men supposed to think if they read this book? If men, is this what women really want? What is a man supposed to think about what women want? And I'm assuming that, because this book was chosen because it is, the 20-year-old said that this is Twilight with sex.
Yeah.
And I hope it has a happy ending, but of course, the first book, and it's not just I can follow the fantasies. Christian is an extremely skilled lover. He knows how to please. Every time he touches her, she
right.
is very
on fire.
Pleased.
Yeah, right.
And but the abuse, I mean, the first book ends, that's as far as I've gotten,
yeah.
With him beating her. And that bothers me.
Yeah.
When I think about women, young women and young men and sex.
And what are men supposed to think? Cheryl, I really appreciate that call. Good luck at the book club tonight. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about 50 Shades of Grey, social and publishing phenomenon now. 20 million copies of the kinky S&M romance sold as of this week. That is just about as big as it gets, and it happened very, very rapidly. Buyers, overwhelmingly women, were asking what's up with the 50 Shades trilogy and what's made it such a pop culture phenom, such a blockbuster bestseller. Megan O'Rourke of Slate is with us today. Rachel Kramer Bussell is with us, editor of Best Bondage Erotica 2012. Carolyn Marvin's here from the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg School for Communication. And yes, heads up, there's sexual content here and in our conversation today, dear listeners. Also some high good humor for Mother's Day in May. Saturday Night Live used the mommy porn popularity of 50 Shades of Grey as inspiration for a spoof of an Amazon commercial. Mom's in the bathtub, family barges in with gifts, she's got 50 shades in the tub and more.
Surprise!
Get out of here!
Is that 50 Shades of Grey?
No, it's a cookbook.
Mom, we got you bad stuff.
I see that, Jonah. Thank you. You can just put it down a little.
On Amazon.com, mommy surprises come in all sizes.
I got to say, it's a really hilarious spoof. You can link to it at our website. You really should check it out. It is as funny as can be. 50 Shades of Grey, all over the place. Softback, paperback, e-books. Derek is calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Derek, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I'm glad to be able to contribute. I'm a psychiatrist, and I've been working in this area for a long time. So I've seen people like Christian and want to share some of my thoughts. First of all, I think, you know, I'd suggest to the women not to take this so seriously. I think that, you know, this country, by and large, avoids talking about sex explicitly like the plague.
Mm-hmm.
So in the sex, in this book, the sex is, it's unconventional, it's explicit, it's fun, and it's guiltless. I think that that's great. I think that it does deal with the whole issue of DS, domination and submission, which mm-hmm. is now entering the mainstream. On the one hand, I think for many people it's now become a kind of scripted play between them, where there are safe words, where they talk in advance about what they're going to do, and where there really is a fair amount of control and people don't get hurt. On the other hand, we have DS, where I think it is a reenactment of early abuse, and in that instance, I think it's a little more, it is in fact a lot more harmful. What I thought about the book, and by the way, I agree it was terribly written,
yes.
You know, the yelps, the eyes, the squeals, the et cetera.
That seems not to be the point, I guess, but yes.
Absolutely. But I found this, from a psychological point of mm-hmm. view, actually consistent and believable. And if I may just say a little about that, Christian, his early issues, loss, abandonment, physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
He then gets involved with this Mrs. Robinson, which is entirely...
When he's consistent. A teenager himself,
yep. Mm-hmm. And just by the way, many women who've been sexually abused as kids have a higher incidence of being raped as an adult. And you'd say, how come? It's because of some of the protective measure that they had to use as kids. They turn off the warning bells.
Mm-hmm.
So Christian gets involved with Mrs. Robinson, and there I think it's like a reenactment of what happened earlier. You know, the mother mm-hmm. who wanted to take care of him but couldn't, and then the abuser. So mm-hmm. this is what happens there. But then he's able, when he gets more successful, to take on the role of the dom, where, again, I think that he begins to manage and master some of that early loss and abuse by being the one who does it. You know, it's almost like, well, it's my turn now to be in control and to abuse.
Is it realistic to think that young Anna might talk him out of that frame of mind? Because that's kind of the narrative arc of the book, or leading him back towards something less dark.
Well, I guess I did have a little trouble with that one, because I think that Anna, at age 22 or 23, mm-hmm. I don't think that she could, but remember that it's written by a woman in her 40s who mm-hmm. has more wisdom. So I thought what Anna is able to do is what the psychiatrist couldn't do. In other words, Anna confronts him with the same kinds of issues, but in a current relationship, and she is able to both push him, set limits. So in that sense, I don't see her as passive and weak. I mean, she really comes across as very strong, and she's able to stand in a grounded way while he goes back and forth with
yeah.
wanting her, with struggling with closeness, with getting overwhelmed. And I think that the times when he, in the psych biz, we would say dissociate, where
mm-hmm.
he, you know, there's a trigger, I think it's done very realistically.
Hey, could I ask you, Derek, you're the psychiatrist here. What about prevalence? I mean, in comedy, which is where this often shows up in American culture,
yeah.
it's usually the man who's being dominated. You know, there's some gal with black boots, and it's the guy who's being dominated.
You see, I think that the fantasy, you know, got to remember that it's fantasy and play,
sure.
which
mm-hmm.
I think is what's so nice. Now, you know, what I'm curious about, I'm the first male on the show. I have a feeling that for us guys, we're probably all intimidated by Christian, and his imagination knows no bounds. His sex is both exhaustive and exhausting. He's got a pair of fingers that rival the flying Willenders. I think that for my hunch is that for women, it's fun to read this. There's not a whole lot of talk about sex in this culture. I mean, let's not forget that the Surgeon General was fired in 1996 for even suggesting that we talk about masturbation.
Yeah, because nobody does that.
Of course. Or those who do are blind.
Yeah, right. Derek, thanks so much for your call. Rachel, this is your neck of the woods. What about our psychiatrist calls and says, this looks kind of realistic what's presented here, but you said, well, yes, maybe, but then they just plunge into everything so sort of quick and flat. You've seen it in a more, organic, long-time development.
Well, I think the way E.L. James has written both characters is very over the top. Anna's a virgin, and she's really never done anything, and he's only had kinky sex, BDSM. He's never had vanilla sex. So that's something new for him. Mm. And that part and the part where he presents her with this agreement that she's supposed to sign, even though she hardly knows anything about what's going on, just seemed very abrupt to me and over the top, almost like he met her and he wanted her to fill this slot as his next sub. I didn't get as much until later of an emotional connection from him about why he was drawn to her, other than that he wanted to do these things to her.
And boom, off go the sails. Angie in Boston, you're on the air. Angie, thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Fine.
I just have an observation I would like to share, and that is I do run an erotica site for women. It's sssh.com.
Okay.
And we started in 1999, and, we've really picked up steam in the last 5 years. And about 2 years ago, I would say our membership base doubled, and we were starting to hear comments from, husbands and wives saying, thank you so much. You've really improved our sex life or our marriage or what have you. And the last couple of years our growth has just been astronomical. We just can't keep up with it.
So what do you make of it? Are women suddenly freer to just talk about it?
It's becoming more acceptable. I think people are going, women are sexual creatures, and it's okay. Plus, I think it's important that everybody remember we feed a fantasy. It's a fantasy. And ABC had contacted us, and we did ABC Nightline. We shared the episode with 50 Shades of Grey.
Mm-hmm.
And, you want to talk about traffic spikes. And I think it's because as soon as people become aware that we're actually out there, I think 50 Shades of Grey has made it acceptable. People have gone, okay, women are sexual. This is okay.
Yeah, here we are. It's 2012, and people can talk about it. Angie, thanks for your call. One more, if I may. Debbie in Acton, Massachusetts. Debbie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you think?
Well, one of the things that struck me were the comments about feminism and somehow feminism not supporting people reading this book, women enjoying this book, women engaging in these activities. And I want to point out that my view of that is exactly the opposite. I think in the post-feminist era, the message is women are empowered. Women are empowered to live the kinds of lives they want to live, including their sexual lives. And engage in this fantasy, whether they read it, whether they act on it. I think feminism supports that. It supports choices, and I think this is a choice. I also want to say that, this phenomenon is kind of, as has been pointed out by some of your other callers, it's part of our history. It's part of our culture, and I think that technology is bringing it to the front and bringing more and more people into the conversation, but this isn't new. I mean, this is erotica. Erotica's been around a long time. And for people that are asking, what should men make of this? Well, this is a fantasy book. This is about fantasy. So I think men should look at it that way.
Hey, fantasy, and off we go. Debbie, thanks for your call. Carolyn, it is truly, in some ways, a kind of empowerment when, yes, there's a lot of women reading it on Kindle, so you don't know what they're reading. But I have seen this, even at the garage. There it is, right on the counter, and nobody embarrassed about it. That's a kind of empowerment, Carolyn.
Well, I'll tell you a story, I think, that shows how far we've come. My own mother in the 1950s was interested in reading Lady Chatterley's Lover. But she was very She read it when her husband was out of town, mm-hmm. and after she read it, she put it in the garbage because she thought if anything happened to her, she didn't want anybody to know that she had been reading that.
Right.
And so that's a kind of isolation, you know, that was characteristic of then and certainly is not now. And I don't think anybody should underestimate the power of the internet to spread the word, because what happens on the internet is, first of all, you can look at this stuff unobserved, but in looking at it unobserved and following the discussion of it, you can soon find out that it is, in fact, a topic of popular discussion. So I think the internet does two things. It protects people who may be embarrassed or feel that it would mm-hmm. somehow be scandalous for them to read it. But at the same time, they learn from the internet that it is all over the popular culture and can be discussed.
Yeah, no secret about it. Let's hear from a couple of guys, Mike in Milton, Vermont. Mike, you're on the air. What do you think, Mike?
Hi, Tom. Thank you. My wife's friends had all read it. I hadn't read it. I saw the Saturday Night Live skit.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, what's the big deal? After I read it, it takes a little bit to shock me, maybe when it comes to that stuff. I'm 44 years old.
Okay.
It's definitely fantasy. I would find at times, like what the doctor just said, that as, you know, male readers might be envious. The only thing I was envious of was maybe the Audis that he seems to be driving all over the place. But
the fancy cars. But were you shocked by the sex, Mike, or not?
There was a couple of spots that I was like, wow, I can't believe I just read that, having read DeMille and Clancy and kind of more guidebook.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of a shock, but also there was the funny factor for a guy going, the sex scenes that are described all last about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm like, this guy's got more than just, you know, than the dark room issues.
Yeah, because they got to get back to the romance, and they get back there awfully fast. Mike, don't be too shocked, but thank you for your call. One more, if I may, Bill in Woburn, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Okay.
Hey, I just wanted to call and give you the stereotypical male point of view, and the fact that these books are probably the greatest thing to ever come along.
Why? What do you mean? For what?
Oh, because women are always so, against it seems, so against pornography and whatnot, but when it's written in literature, it's perfectly fine, and it's great. I love it, you know? I mean, it's, these books are really good and fulfilling fantasies for women that hasn't really happened before. And I think it's great, you know?
Do you know any women who have read it?
My wife is reading them now, and she loves them, and I think it's great because, you know, we've always had a great bedroom relationship, and it's intensified even more. I'm loving this.
Bill, riding the 50 Shades wave, I appreciate that very much. Let me get one more here. Allie in Glastonbury, Connecticut. Allie, you're on.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you think?
You know, listen, for me, it was just a fun read. It's. I don't think about all of the dilemma and whatever. It was something new for a lot of people, I'm sure. But if you read some of the historical romances that are out there on the market right now,
yeah.
There was nothing in this that you women haven't been reading for years. That is why I think people like Nora Roberts, Danielle Steele, they sell millions and millions of books. And I'll tell you something, when you read these books, you don't ever read about a woman having to clean a toilet,
no.
Sweep out the garage, mow the lawn.
No.
It's all about, you know what, it's all about why, it's just having fun. That's what it's about. It's about fun. I didn't look at it as something I had to think about. I mean, I'm 50. My girlfriends and I all read it. We were just laughing. And I'll tell you something. My mother read it, and she called me, and she was laughing. And you know what? You just have to go into it. It's for fun. And like I've said through the years, you read those historical romances that are out there.
Yep.
Believe me. That's nothing new in this book.
Been there, done that. Allie, I so appreciate your call. I mean, it's interesting, Megan, this kind of freedom just in that laughter about it, just in the freedom to read and laugh and marvel and even scoff. Erica Jong didn't really like it, Fear of Flying. Sure, it's 50 Shades of Arg, she says about it, and it says it barely qualifies as a book. Where do you think this goes, Megan? You've got your book club at Slate. Do we see more of this, maybe with better prose, or is this a big one-off?
Oh, well, come on. I mean, romances are a huge part of the women's reading market. I really agree with a lot of what the past, callers have been saying. I mean, mm-hmm. This book is very funny, first of all. There's a lot of humor in it. I think that's important. At the same time, there is a dark strand in it, which is Christian's abuse Esso as a child. He was starved and so on and so forth. So on the one hand, this book is about fun and play. On the other hand, there is a darkness in it. And that's just the nature of, again, I think, the romance novels. So I feel like this book, you know, one of the things I was trying to get at is, in a way, I think there's a certain kind of overthinking of this book because of the subject matter. And it is like so many other books out there. I mean, there's so much erotica and romance for women, as Rachel knows, and women have been reading the romances for many, many years, you know. So I think this is hardly a one-off. I think it is part of a robust corner of the book market, and whether the kind of book clubs reading the book, whether there's another cultural phenomenon as large as this one that's erotica, I don't know.
Rachel, Rachel, does it take the taboo away from your neck of the woods? You know, does it sort of take away some of the allure by making it so mainstream? Or do you think you're going to have more people coming into Best Bondage 2012?
Well, I don't know that, you know, everyone who's reading this is going to want to keep reading, especially, I think there's a difference. Erotica is intended to arouse, that doesn't need the love story. And this is definitely an erotic romance. But I think, as the callers have said, what it has done is no one's ashamed of reading it, and they're reading it, their families reading it, their friends. So people are talking about it, and they're also talking about it within their relationships. And I think that's something we haven't seen on such a mass scale before.
Mass scale discussion of this neck of the woods, definitely something new in my experience, and lots of good lighthearted takeoffs on it as we go. It's been fun to hear some of those today. Rachel Kramer-Bussell, editor of Best Bondage Erotica 2012. A surprise and a delight to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us, Rachel.
Thank you.
Megan O'Rourke with Slate joining us today from the Harborfront Inn in Greenport, New York. Thanks for your insights, Megan.
Thanks.
And Carolyn Marvin at the Annenberg School for Communication, University of Pennsylvania. Always great to have you. Thanks for joining us, Carolyn.
Enjoyed it.
Thanks to my producers, Julie and Eileen and Christina and Karen and Emily and much more. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.